Mortgages should be illegal because you're getting robbed every month. With a typical $200,000 30-year mortgage, you'll end up paying over $400,000 after interest. Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. My proven system can eliminate your mortgage and all your debts. Let me send you a powerful free CD. For your free CD, call 1-800-338-2884. 1-800-338-2884. 1-800-338-2884.
Blog Talk Radio.
It's the Jenny Hatt Show at Blogging Mothers Magazine, and I'm your host. My special guest today is Jonathan Elinoff, the director and producer of Core of Corruption. Jonathan, are you there?
I'm here.
Great. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I was a history major, and I spent the last 10 years specifically starting with 9/11, tracking that, because that summer leading up to the attacks, I was actually in a military program in Israel, and spent 6 months out there in Border Patrol, did Lebanese Border Patrol, Syrian Border Patrol, Jordanian Border Patrol, and had a fascinating time out there, changed my kind of life. And I was originally supposed to go back out there the following summer and do Marva, and then, of course, do Aliyah, play, you know, do the Allegiance and join. But I never did, because after 9/11 happened, which I was here for, I came back 2 weeks before. Yeah, I had studied out there the counterterrorism pretty intensely. And I would argue that I'm a counterterrorism expert, because I know about terrorism as a topic. I know about Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade. I know about Islamic Jihad. I know about all of the various, you know, Hamas and Hezbollah, all the various terrorist organizations that are officially labeled that, although I've come to realize that may not actually be what they are. But I've learned a lot about this, and Al-Qaeda has always been known, even when I first studied this topic in 2001, as the CIA's official network. It was known then as that, and it was never seen ever as any significant threat to the American actual homeland, actual specific territory. And all intelligence gathered on Al-Qaeda up until 9/11 was significant, that they were planning an attack to hijack planes and fly it into a building. That was for 5 or 6 years. And that was specific to American territory. However, we had stopped that plot, or so that was understood. So I was, when I saw that, I was under the understanding, wait a second, this is a 6-year-old plot called Operation Bajinka. And then I was familiar with a few other times when we stopped a similar planning of this. So the very thing that I went through told me there was no way they didn't know about this, because we had first got wind of this in 1995. So for the last 10 years, I've tracked the hijackers, wanted to learn everything about 9/11. Naturally, I've kind of become an expert on conspiracy theory in general, and at being a history major, I'm all over the place. But 9/11 became my specialty, as well as the Kennedy assassination and a few others.
So you would say that there is a big stinking cesspool emanating out of the Central Intelligence Agency.
Well, they are an agency that absolutely had prior knowledge, and I'm proving that in the Core Corruption sequels that are coming out March 27th.
And you made the case in Core of Corruption 1 that most, if not all, of the hijackers on 9/11 had ties to the CIA and were perhaps even assets of the CIA.
Well, they were definitely intelligence assets or operatives. There's no debate about that. For sure, that's the case. But specifically, in the second film, I will be dedicating the whole concept of the second film is what is the U.S. specific involvement with the attack. And I did that because I wanted to make a series to ease people into this topic, because, you know, people talk about the conspiracy, and I'm familiar with all the conspiracy theories out there, and I would say 90 to 95% of them are bullcrap. They're not even close to the truth. In fact, much of it is planted deliberately to
confuse.
Either to confuse or by someone who's very sick and disturbed. It's very sad to see that. And I agree with people that probably what they've heard about it is total waste of time. But I'm one of those people that you won't waste your time with hearing, because I actually interviewed the people that trained the hijackers. I've actually met Pomodato's girlfriend. I actually had to go to the FBI with my attorney because of the investigation I was doing on the insider trading related to 9/11. And I am not a conspiracy theorist. I've never suggested any theory as to what happened that day. And I don't propose to explain what I believe happened that day. But I can tell you what I can verify about the attacks. And I can verify certainly that there was prior knowledge. I can't tell you where that knowledge went and how they reacted to it, because I don't know. But there was definitely intelligence gathered that could have prevented the attacks. And the question is, you know, what they did with that intelligence.
Right. I watched Core of Corruption over the weekend for the first time, and I've kind of dabbled around 9/11 stuff. Like you, I found that most of it out on the web, especially in the early years, was really kind of weird. But just lately, there's been quite a bit of Bob McElvey, the Building 7 campaign.
Mm-hmm.
This type of information resonates with me as being truthful. And when I watched your movie, I was really impressed that so much of it is just film clips from news shows that day, mainstream media.
Right.
And it just kind of fit that there were some evil people out there who perhaps had a hand in this and then used the patsies that they've used for the last 50 years in the form of Muslim terrorists to blame it on. Could you tell us just a little bit about what you know of the corporation, the Partnership for New York City?
I'm not involved with that, so I'm not going to be able to explain much about that. I don't sit on the 9/11 Truth Board or any of that stuff. I'm not as active as I used to be with the activists, although I'm friends with all of them and I know them. I've interviewed most of them. I kind of, you know, in the last 3 years, I started NewWorldOrderReport.com and started my own news site because I got fascinated with this whole New World Order conspiracy kind of top, you know, stuff. And I had always thought it was silly growing up. I always thought that was silly. And as I got older and I read different biographies of major pivotal figures in history when I became a history major, I had no clue that term was ever even used by them, and I never knew that was ever rationalized.
There's plenty of video of them using those very words.
Right, yeah, and it goes back, it's old. I mean, it goes back to H.G. Wells, had the very first book printed called New World Order. I mean, there's a history of this concept being very well articulated and very well, you know, presented in precisely what it was. And it was a world order that had not yet come to pass, and they were trying to see that. And that world order, we've always had world orders, but that specific world order has different meanings to the different people presenting their version of the new world order, but all of it is collectively, essentially different establishment and, you know, powerful nobility families essentially having collective control through banking and corporate entities globally in a very large system globally that runs through this kind of diplomatic process. Everything's through treaties and a very strong military to enforce these policies that, of course, they are pretty much the only ones capable of getting into because they control the outlets that, of course, get them in. So it's a very intelligent design in government. It's really not like a kingdom or a monarchy. It ensures their ancestry, you know, their fathers and fathers before them who fought to see a global empire. It ensures that to come about. It just might not be a monarchy or what it always was throughout the ages as at least their line has worked towards this concept. They've refined it over the years continually because they've failed many times. They've gone for this so many times through the Catholic Church, imperializing and colonializing, through Western expansion here even. They tried this through the Great Wars, even through great leaders like Napoleon and even, you know, looking at Hitler. I mean, a lot of this arguably was on behalf of the interests that were financing these people. And that's all been uncovered now. And I didn't learn this until I started taking college courses in history. I thought you know, Hitler was just kind of like this guy who did this all on his own behalf. And that's far from the truth. He actually presented his ideas for financing, and then when they heard what he was interested in doing, he had presented a very well-planned idea. And they gave, I mean, right when he got out of jail in Germany, he got 150,000 gold pieces. Deutsche Bank gave him 150,000 gold pieces. And at that time, that's the equivalent of basically giving somebody like $500 million. I mean, you just don't get a loan like that. That doesn't happen. The banks thoroughly were convinced this was the man to go finance. He was going to make sure that the empire took that next step. And people don't understand that everything has context. Everything has origin. Everything has to be explained. Things don't just pop up out of somewhere. Things have to be financed. Banks have to be involved. And when you study that, there's a history. There's families. There's bloodlines.
Well, and one of the things I've learned from my friend Barbara Hartwell is that it's naive and simplistic to think that all of the people who make up this group see the world in exactly the same way and are fighting for the same causes and have the same interests. She told me there is a lot of infighting and that they actually kind of behave like the mafia.
That's right.
Families that just are kind of constantly fighting for turf wars, and one's tied to oil, one's tied to pharmaceuticals, one's tied to this, one's tied to that. And it's not like they're just this one big collective that sees the world in exactly the same way, and they're all just, you know, lockstep marching ahead with this one vision. That's not the way it is at all. And so whenever I listen to people talk about this topic, I'm always kind of curious to see if they understand that, because when they start talking about the New World Order and, you know, this is what they're going to do, blah, 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 that's not necessarily true. You know, there's a lot of ebb and flow around the power lines and the power structures, always, of course, moving towards globalism. That's the end game. That's the goal. And as I see it, the number one thing that's been standing in their way has been the sovereignty of the American people and the United States Constitution. And that I look at 9/11 as a terrorist attack on the brains and the psyche of the American people, that the trauma that resulted from that attack shattered so many people's conscious mind. And this is my background. I've studied quite a bit about psychiatry, what psychiatric meds do to the brain, and how the brain functions when it's traumatized. And I believe one of the biggest agendas around 9/11 was simply to traumatize the American people so that they were more malleable and able to manipulate. And a whole bunch of us started taking psychiatric meds this past 10 years to deal with the trauma around 9/11. What do you think about that?
That seems very accurate, actually. The 9/11 Visibility Group here in Colorado is made up of a lot of, certified therapists, legal therapists, who some of them, believe it or not, got into this because they had people going to them who were struggling with digesting this information and focusing and working. And, you know, they, of course, as therapists, were treating them and trying to help them with what they thought was paranoia and delusion and some serious psychosis and stuff like that. And as they started to realize, that's not the case. And, of course, they actually were so compelled by it because they had so many people coming that they decided to go ahead and start an actual group dedicated to that issue because they had too many patients related to that specific issue. They started actually saying, why don't you just come to the group talk so we can all just together, there's so many of you. And that was more effective, and that turned into a very effective activist group related to 9/11. And unfortunately, of course, they're tagged with being nutbags and people who don't know what they're talking about. But these are all people with doctor degrees. I mean, these are very well-educated individuals who I know them personally. Not only do I know that their intentions are sincere, but they know exactly what is suspicious about 9/11 and the story and why people are concerned. And in many cases, most of these activist groups include family members of victims and are directly connected to the members of the victims of that attack. And people don't understand, it's not a fringe element like Ann Coulter will tell you. She's false on this. I'm not a fan of her. I know people who are. But she has that wrong, and that's not uncommon. Most people in the network news are not telling you the truth. And they've never spent one iota of time in their life looking into it. I've met these people. I'm telling you, they don't know. And I've met some of them in network news, and I'm telling you, they're intentionally trying to distract people and confuse people about what is true about that, because that's part of what they're being told to do. And they'll lose their jobs if they do not do that.
Well, all you have to do is look at who's advertising when the news is on, and it's always pharmaceutical companies, always. And when I mentioned the partnership for New York City, one of the things that people aren't aware is that the people who run the big pharmaceutical companies, like Merck, also own the media, and they just aren't aware of these things. And so we have to be very skeptical about the things we're hearing. And while the war itself, the wars in the Middle East, have been horrifying, I believe there's a bigger war that's worldwide that's going on right now. And it's literally the war between natural healing and pharmaceuticals. And this is a war. I don't know if you're familiar with Scripture.
I'm very familiar with it, absolutely. But I have vaccinationeducation.com as one of my websites.
Well,
I'm very involved in it.
In the book of Revelations, there is a specific prophecy that talks about, in the last days, all of the nations being deceived by sorcery, and that includes pharmaceuticals. And I really, you know, believe that this is the control mechanism, is we traumatize everybody. We're traumatized when we're born. We traumatize mothers when they give birth, traumatized by the things that are happening out there in the world, like 9/11 and other false flag events. And then we turn to the pharmaceuticals to help us cope, because these are horrifying things. And then we get numbed down, dumbed down, can't think clearly, and we're much more easy to manipulate and control. That's what I think 9/11 was about. I know I've studied your background and that you are an anti-war activist, and I don't know if you studied my background, but I am a neocon hawk. I am a flaming conservative who has been very supportive of what's been happening in Iraq, Afghanistan, and the rest of the Middle East. Now, I think it's great that people with our backgrounds can talk and try to find common ground. What do you think?
Well, I am not an anti-war person. I'm not a member of the anti-war community. But I am somebody who believes that the specific war in Iraq is not being fought correctly, and I feel the same with the war on terror. And that's only because I study terrorism and I know how Israel fights terrorism, and Israel fights terrorism far more effectively. And it's not through carpet bombing cities or through mass campaigns with trillions of dollars of funding. That's not how it's going to be done. It's an intelligence war, to say the least. And
I know
this
that
country
your first,
is not
your
intended
first,
on. Yeah.
Your first documentary was called Raw, and it was about the Iraq War. Do you feel like there's any good that's been done over there with the democratization and the constitution?
There's a million Iraqi civilians dead, and that never needed to happen. I mean, if this was a strategic war that was targeting someone who was any threat to the United States, it failed to do that. However, it did create a lot of enemies that we did not have before our invasion, and it did do a very good job of building a case against a man who arguably was a threat to his people and a bad person, but that is true with a lot of people around the world, and we do not make that case for them. And I think it's odd that we would pick one every now and then when it's convenient to us. And that's my issue with it. It's not that I disagree he was a bad man. I think he was a horrible man. I think he did deserve this. But I don't understand why the U.S. doesn't embrace this kind of fundamental decision in war with all of the people like Saddam Hussein. And they don't, which tells me this is not genuine. This is not specific to targeting people who've done what he did. They had hit out for him specifically because they have intentions with that region. They have intentions geopolitically with those resources, and I think that's fairly obvious. But they can sell a good campaign about this.
I've read those arguments, and I have a lot. I live in Boulder, so I have a lot of friends who are, you know, complete polar opposite of me politically. And we've had some stimulating conversations. But I look at what's happened in Iran 2 years ago with the citizens uprising and what's been happening this past summer.
Well, that was a campaign by the CIA. That's not a legitimate campaign.
Well,
Iran,
we're
going
to have to agree
a,
to disagree, because I look at what's been happening with the Arab Spring. this past
right, that's
summer.
That's all CIA. That's all been thoroughly documented CIA. But it is legitimate. It is genuine Arabs that are fighting for democracy, but that is well-funded and intended, and it's being coerced and helped out by the CIA.
I haven't seen any of that information, and I believe
that's
me.
What they've done for 50 years. That's what the CIA specializes in. That's what we've done in every country for the last 50 years is we go in and we finance people who have an interest in spreading democracy in countries that don't have it. We've done that's nothing new. That's not conspiratorial. That's what you pay the CIA to do. So if they have done that, then this is a very effective operation because most people have not caught wind of them being present. But I've seen them present. I know people involved in the operations to ensure the Arab Spring took place. And it was arguably the best campaign the CIA has ever conducted. And it's something that many people in the CIA who are good people, as well as many people in the Pentagon who are good people, believe they've done their work. And it's good to see that they've stepped up and done more of what has needed to be done in that region, because that is specifically how I believe a war should be fought in that region, is through those intelligence apparatuses by doing things like the Arab Spring. And that's what I mean by an intelligence war. And that's the CIA has had effective operations for 50 years, spreading democracy. It is through financing rebels, encouraging democracy, making sure they riot, making sure they protest, making sure that gets documented, the world sees them being slaughtered, and then they sympathize with these rebels, they empathize with them, they then have a figurehead, an oppressive regime in that country that they all agree needs to go, and then they ask for our intervention. And that's how an effective military strategy should be run. And that's not what was done in Iraq, and that was my objection to it, is that I do not think it was done in the traditional sense that was well thought and well planned, and we know that. Cheney knew that the method that they went in 92, he had said that the reason why they didn't go into Iraq after getting Kuwait was because it would be a quagmire. It would split up into the three communities. You know, the North would go to the Kurds and so on and so forth, and they knew that was going to happen, that it would be a lot of American casualties and a lot of unnecessary civilian casualties, and that's why they didn't want to do it, because it was too immoral. And he said these words in 1992 in an interview. He knew this. Everyone in the establishment knew this. This is not new. This is not a left opinion. This is an official military conclusion on that war, which is why we didn't fight it in 92. However, when Bush got in 2000, he made a very specific intention, making it clear with his administration, and that's all been well documented now, it's all come out, that he wanted war with Iraq, and we needed to find a reason for it. Now, I do not believe, and I do not subscribe to the theory, that 9/11 was to get us into Iraq.
I don't
but
either.
I do subscribe to the theory that it was used to help gain an argument. There's a big difference between those two. And I don't think people get that. But I do think that administration had, it was made clear to them to make sure we were getting into that country. And 9/11 was used as one of the reasons to gain support for our presence there. And these are my objections. I do not believe they did a good job building their campaign publicly. Obviously they didn't, because so many people are objecting to the war. So obviously I'm somewhat accurate in saying that, you know, they didn't do a very good job planning their campaign. They didn't think this through. They didn't think about the most effective way to get in there. They could have framed Saddam. They could have had, just like with Nita in Iran, they could have documented protests and showed them being shot, which is what gained the support that empathized with these protesters in the first place. And so many nations then stopped doing what they were doing because they didn't want to deal with the scrutiny they were receiving globally, because they have such influence in the UN, and they would lose that influence, and they knew that.
Well,
and the CIA
I don't
knew
think
that. That's
anybody, I don't think anybody in the world would be upset if the president sent a couple of platoons of Marines to North Korea and had them strap the great leader's body to a nuke and send him deep sea fishing in the Pacific. I really don't think anybody would be upset.
Well,
that specific strategy might not be embraced, but. That is why I'm a neocon, because I believe it's appropriate to say, look, everybody knows what's happening in this country. Everybody knows it's a police state. Everybody knows Kim Jong-il is as corrupt as the day is long. Why don't we go free those people? What are we waiting for? You know?
Well, that's not a neoconservative platform position, but I do agree with you, and I stand with you on your intentions. And that's kind of why I left the Republican Party, was because I started realizing what the official party platforms were and how they didn't reflect my meaning and intention, and that neither party does, So I hate being linked with one party or the other because each issue I have very specific intentions on. And
well,
it's often
you automatically get stereotyped, believe me. I try to describe my political views to people and they see that I'm into home birth and not vaccinating and they just assume I'm some flaming liberal. And it's like, no, guys, no, this is who I am. And, you know, I don't even know what to call myself because of my views. I'm just
Well, you don't have to call yourself anything. You're
no,
just
I am just I am a truth seeker who wants to understand this world that I live in. And I want to try and make it a better place for my family. And if that makes me an enemy or, you know, delusional or whatever.
No,
people,
no, I'm right there with you.
Call
I feel
me,
what you're saying.
That is where I'm at. And,
I know a lot of neoconservatives in the establishment and specifically hardcore Republicans that are all very upset and disgruntled about the way the Bush administration handled everything from its PR to its invasion and handling of the wars.
Well, I got to tell you, Jonathan, the same things were said about the American Revolution. It was a mess. Nobody believed it was going to work.
Well, I don't believe that.
Right up until the last minute, the American Revolution was a failure. And then it was like, whoa, we won.
So I think it's arguable those are two completely fundamentally different aspects of war. The revolution was 99% of the population, I believe 97% specifically, was not fighting that operation. That was guerrilla warfare, and most of the country was just wanting to be quiet and work with the British and not cause any trouble. That was fundamentally different. That was us fighting for our revolution. That's not what Iraq was. There were no people fighting for their freedom from Saddam, although we did find people who wanted to be a part of the new government, and then, of course, we financed them to be a part of the war effort. They had no intention of a revolution. There's a fundamental difference in why that war is fought. War is not just people shooting each other and stabbing each other. There are reasons people go to these efforts, and there was no intention in Iraq for those people that anywhere. None of those million civilians deserve to die by our hands. We had no intention of targeting anybody who didn't intend to die. So I do not believe that war was planned well. That doesn't mean I'm anti-war or that I didn't support going into Iraq. It just means I don't support the way it was handled because I know it could have been done better because I saw the same intelligence reports they did and I saw the same PR they were using and I knew it was an easy way out. It was traditionally the methods used that are not that effective and they knew that but they didn't want to do the work and that doesn't make it excusable. They're supposed to do the job that they're told to do, that they're hired to do. And they took the easy roads that they knew were going to be probably ineffective, probably not liked, and increase animosity towards the U.S., and that's precisely what that did.
Well,
of
friends with a lot of people who served, family members who were there, who sent weekly emails home, and are proud of the work that they did over there.
Oh, no, there's a lot of work they've done that's amazing. Don't get me wrong. There's stuff they've done that's good.
I stand with those people.
Right.
I think.
Well, there doesn't have to be a line in the sand here, okay? You can have objections to part of the war and not be anti-war, and vice versa. I think they've done incredible things in Iraq, but that's not to say a million Iraqi civilians aren't dead.
Well,
that's an unfortunate tragedy that didn't happen. These are people that had no animosity towards us, and we didn't need that many civilian casualties. That's a lot of civilian casualties in today's technological advancements, and that's something that we should take seriously and learn from our mistakes and embrace it. But instead, many people want to act like, let's not talk about that because this was a success. No, I think we need to find out anything we did wrong and make sure the military ensures that we reduce our mistakes.
I agree,
better.
And I don't see anything wrong with questioning certain situations, but at looking at the whole big picture, I'm thrilled with the outcome, and whether it's CIA or not, I look at what's happening in the Middle East as being a direct result of American intervention and enabling people, giving them the tools to say, here, we're going to not only free you from your dictator, we're going to stand by you while you set up a democracy.
That's what the Arab Spring was, and it worked.
Well, I think 10, 20 years down the road, we're all going to look back and see the summer of 2007 and the surge as being the pivot point and just saying, okay, this is where it's going, this is what happened, and it's why I personally went and counter-demonstrated at anti-war demonstrations because I felt like it was just so disrespectful to our
soldiers. Well,
I don't
like
soldiers.
To take the sides of those guys.
It's so disrespectful to our soldiers to go do something like that when they're out there putting themselves in harm's way. And
one could argue that these people's intention are to protect these soldiers' use and other methods, and that they don't want to put them in harm's way.
And
I know a lot of safety war demonstrators that don't have any malintent towards these soldiers.
No, and I would never get in any American's face and say, you can't have your free speech, because that's not who I am either. But
right.
I was sickened I went to quite a few of the Denver anti-war demonstrations, and I was, you know, just really disheartened.
There's a reason why I don't get involved with a lot of the 9/11 truth demonstrations anymore, for the same reasons, because there are people out there that see them for the same reasons. They're disrespectful, and you know why? Because a lot of them, the majority of them, are, like, as you know, with CIA disinformation, and I see the same thing in anti-war, and you better bet that anti-war is a much larger target than any conspiracy group. That is a major effort to ensure that those groups come off a very specific way so that nobody listens to them, and it's effective. And it was so effective, you wouldn't counter-demonstrate them. So it's clear they're doing their job. So that's why I just don't get involved with these activists anymore.
I don't like the way so many of those anti-war groups affiliate with Marxists. I just...
Right. Well, that's all, like I said, remember, three-quarters of the CIA's work is involved in information control, specifically disinformation, COINTELPRO, and the anti-war establishment is the biggest target, has been for 40 years. That's where the COINTELPRO was first found. That's where we got our first documentation of them. So bear in mind, that's arguably what a lot of what you're probably seeing. And I could give a case for that, but I'm sure you probably are already familiar with it. That's why the people I know, the sincere and honest people who do their work, and, you know, as a truth-seeking effort to help our country better itself, okay, that's what we're doing. And we don't go to those demonstrations, no matter what activist group it is, because we realized it. We saw it very quickly, and we backed away quickly. And we don't like being associated with any of this stuff, but we have no choice because we're not on the network news. We don't have the voice. We don't have the power, and nobody wants to listen to us because they naturally associate us with what they've seen on the network news. So it takes a certain intellect to do what you've done and embrace people like me, what Peter Boyles has done with me. I actually am a little differently. I get much further than most people with 9/11 because people know I'm not a theorist and that I don't believe the government actually orchestrated the attacks, and that I've seen other evidence to the contrary.
Well,
but
it's exactly why I said I want to talk to this man, because, you know, I could feel that coming through your movie. And as you talked to Peter last week, too, it was like, okay, I want to talk to this guy. We're winding down. We've only got a few minutes. What do you think about the Tea Party?
You know, I was there in the original, you know, when that grassroots movement started. I was a part of that because a lot of the intentions and the people who founded that effort, long before Fox News commercialized it, of course.
Well, you're talking to one of them. I gave the opening speech at the first Denver Tea Party.
Yeah, so you're familiar. Well, even before the actual term Tea Party, there were tax protests in 2004 that I used to go to, and 2005, and a lot of that stemmed from, you know, the work that various directly, America Freedom of Fascism, and what was done there, and Ron Paul, and a lot of the supporters of Ron Paul.
Right.
A lot of those people were already protesting on tax day, were already protesting, in fact, the bank protests on November 22. Those were organized by a lot of these people. And I saw it long before, you know, it ever got to what it is now today. And I've watched it evolve and slowly kind of become what it is. But I think, unfortunately, like with any other movement, there are operatives in it. I've met some of these people. There's no doubt about their fact of being an operative and an asset. And their intention is not sincere. Their intention is very clear that this is a matter of co-opting. It's an interest of controlling, making sure this doesn't get out of hand, and that they can lead and make sure that they can, you know, control whatever speak and planning is going to be done in these groups. That's not to say that not all of them are like that or what have you, but I've seen that. And it was intentionally associated with neoconservatism and associated with the Republican Party, which a lot of the people who intended and who started it, who were in the grassroots of it, intended it to be a non-party affiliated issue.
Oh, that's
they
right.
They wanted to stand all parties.
I organized the 9/12 2009 Constitution Tea Party at the Denver Capitol, and that was exactly what I said to all of our team. We are not going to mention a political party.
Right.
We are absolutely focused on the founding documents, particularly the Constitution.
Well, now it's a Republican issue. Now it's only Republican candidates or Tea Party. I mean, Fox, along with one of the major networks, has turned the Tea Party, unfortunately, not saying that it isn't on the local level, because it's not, but on the large scale, on the co-opt level, it's turned into that. And that's what they're used to doing. They specialize in this. But unfortunately, a good 50 to 60% of the people I know don't even entertain it anymore because they think it's a Republican thing. And if they're not Republicans, then I tell them, just look at the issues. So that's one of the reasons why I just don't officially label myself. I don't give myself a status because these things, these names, these tags given, they disillusion people into believing whatever they want to think as a prejudice against me before ever listening to me. So it's more effective if I say I'm not that. But I've heard what they've said, and I've been a part of their things, and I agree with their intentions.
I've already been labeled, a racist and a homophobe, and just because I speak at a tea party. Okay, well, Jonathan Elenoff, it's been a pure joy to have you on the show. I love it when people from all different kinds of backgrounds can just have a conversation.
Yeah, I wish we'd had more time.
Well, maybe
so
I'll have
you. So much more to get into on 9/11. Actually, I have two sequels coming out on March 27th. There's so much I have out, if you like the first film. But
I loved it.
You're going to love the sequels. So.
Well, it's...
Because I really spent a long time finding out what I believe to be the truth, and there is a conspiracy, but it's not the one that people have even heard about. And it is concerning to me because there's very serious involvement with Saudi Arabia and some other entities, and I'm pursuing a very, hardcore case in my series.
I have to ask you, why are you still alive?
Well, I'm not a, for a few reasons. One, I'm not a witness to anything. I can never be called to trial. I can't testify because everything I am repeating to people is all from other sources. So therefore, by definition, it's hearsay or conjecture. So this is not, I could never be called to a trial. So they usually kill people who can be called to a trial, like a witness to something or somebody who was involved in an operation, things like that.
I was just sickened when Danny Jawenko was murdered this past summer. It just, that just sickened me.
Well, that's the other, he can be called to a trial, that's why.
Yeah.
And the second, the most common reason why I'm probably fine is because they know I don't fear death, first of all. It's not going to change my intentions. I've gone through times in my life where I died and came back, was in the hospital and they had to revive me. Death is not something that I fear, and as a military training history, they know that that's not what's, going to do it for me. What it is for me is as long as I don't have original content that is my research that I found out that nobody else did, I usually don't have anything to worry about because usually the people who find something out that could be proven, like journalists and stuff, who really find something that's not already printed, those people are in danger, and that's usually who they kill too. And I don't have any information like that. All the information I have, they already know about. And it leads usually away from them as a suspect in 9/11, so they don't see me as a threat for that. And two, the information I have is generally I intend to find credible sources because I don't want anyone to question where I got stuff. I want to say, no, look, here's the information. That's why I put all those news clips in my film because I don't want anyone to question where I'm getting this. I only stick with what I can prove, and I don't go any further.
It was brilliantly edited. I was absolutely thunderstruck how well you put it together because you came at it from so many different areas. It's like, okay, let's look at what's happening in Saudi Arabia. Oh, and let's look at Pakistan. Oh, and over here there's Israel. And of course, it all ties back to the CIA. And, it was just, like I said, it fit with everything else that I've been studying. And I'm uncomfortable with anyone out there going, it was all Dick Cheney painting thermite on the tower. I'm not comfortable with that. But
yeah, the only thing with Dick Cheney that I've ever seen is that he put in the drills that day 6 weeks prior to 9/11, all for the exact same time slot. And I get into that in the second film. And I do believe that, and I kind of explore that theory in the second film, that the Saudi Arabian connection with the U.S., people don't understand, is a very intimate one. It's like ExxonMobil is with the government or Halliburton is with the government. The Saudi Arabian oil money goes back to financing most of the CIA operations, especially in that region. And I think very specific requests were made by Bandar and Yasin Akhadi and Fareed bin Mahfouz to the Bush administration that they're very close with. They're also close to the Clinton administration. And these were requests that were embraced and respected, and of course that was a double cross. And I think that's a lot of what happened on 9/11, that things were done because they were doing it out of, you know, professional courtesy for others, intelligence agents and operatives and things like that. And they knew that, that was our weakness, that they could get operatives in here to do what they could through that only network that's well protected. And they double crossed us. And a lot of researchers came to that conclusion when you see the evidence for it. And that's not to say that the CIA may or may not have serious involvement, but there's evidence to suggest that they double-crossed protected operations that we were using these guys with, like Otta, was involved in a protected DEA operation that I found out involving a heroin ring, and he may have double-crossed that network. And it's fascinating stuff, but none of this is the stuff printed on the Internet, and it's not, you know, it's not the conspiracy people have heard, but it's probably what's redacted in the commission report, and that's what I believe.
Well, Jonathan, thank you so much for your time. Why don't you go ahead and plug your websites? I know you have a new news outlet called the New World Order Report. What, any other places where people can see you on the web or contact you?
The best, of course, yeah, is newworldorderreport.com. That's a daily updated 24-hour news site that anyone can check anytime they want. It's updated every day with all select news stories from around the world. It's not a... It's all information as it happens. And, of course, corecorruption.com is where they can see my film.
I also embedded it.
It's free on the Internet.
Yeah, I embedded it on my blog just the other day. So if anybody goes to jennyhatch.com, they can take a look at it. And
we are re-releasing it on March 27th with the others.
Great.
Because it's going to be remastered in audio. And the people who did my audio messed up. They didn't know exactly what they were doing, and their audio levels for the first two or three chapters are all off. It's all, the music's too loud, and I'm getting all that redone, and it's going to look more professional here. All March 27th, there'll be a three-disc compilation of the first, second, and third film, and I already have the fourth film in production, by the way, as well as the fifth installment, which is about assassinations and convenient deaths. So this is a lifelong project that I'm going to take. So
well, may the good Lord above keep you safe. And, you know, Godspeed as you do this important work. And, you know, anytime, if you think you want to just come on and make a podcast, have a little chat, just email me. I'd love to have you back. This is Jenny Hatch, the Blogging Mothers the Jenny Hatch Show of Blogging Mothers Magazine. My guest today has been Jonathan Elinoff, the director of Core of Corruption, a documentary about the 9/11 terrorist attack. Thank you so much, Jonathan.
Yeah, thank you.
Have a great day.
All righty.